Pixar, what's the universe of time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The White House has issued a terse warning to Iran, putting it on notice in the wake of Sunday's ballistic missile test and an attack Tuesday on a Saudi warship by Shia Houthi rebels. Michael Flynn, President Donald Trump's national security advisor, condemned the attack off the coast of Yemen that killed two Saudi sailors.
These are just the latest of a series of incidents in the past 6 months in which Houthi forces that Iran has trained and armed have struck Emirati and Saudi vessels and threatened United States and allied vessels transiting the Red Sea.
Flynn also criticized the previous Obama administration for failing to respond to what he called Iran's malign actions.
The Trump administration condemns such actions by Iran that undermine security, prosperity, and stability throughout and beyond the Middle East, which places American lives at risk.
A Pentagon spokesman said Wednesday there was no change in the U.S. military posture in the region, but Trump administration officials in a background briefing said the U.S. is considering a range of options against Tehran, including economic pressure and assistance to its adversaries. Iran Wednesday confirmed its ballistic missile test, but its defense minister insisted that Sunday's launch did not violate the 2015 nuclear pact with the international community or a U.N. Security Council resolution endorsing it. Longtime Congolese opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi has died while in Brussels for a medical checkup. He was 84. His death occurred as talks about implementing a December power-sharing agreement are underway in Kinshasa to ease tensions caused by President Joseph Kabila's decision to remain in power instead of calling elections as his mandate expired. He is now supposed to step down by year's end. This is VOA News. Israeli police Wednesday moved in with bulldozers to knock down dozens of homes of Jewish settlers at an outpost as the country's Supreme Court ruled was illegally erected on private Palestinian land in the West Bank. Dozens of settlers chanting and sang as hundreds of police forcibly removed them from the Amona outpost near Ramallah. Minor scuffles broke out. Tuesday, Israel announced approval to build another 3,000 settler homes in the West Bank. The U.S. Senate late Wednesday confirmed Rex Tillerson as President Trump's Secretary of State in a 56-43 vote. Mr. Trump said his abilities are sorely needed.
You bring the unique skills and deep, deep insights, and I've gotten to see it firsthand, into foreign diplomacy our nation needs to foster stability and security in a world too often trapped, and right now it's trapped, in violence and in war.
Mr. Trump praised Tillerson for his understanding the importance of building strategic alliances to advance U.S. interests and protecting the American people. During his confirmation hearing, several lawmakers expressed concern over Tillerson's close ties with Russian President Vladimir Putin while head of the energy firm ExxonMobil. Mr. Trump Wednesday made an unannounced trip to Dover Air Force Base in Delaware to honor the return of the body of 36-year-old Navy SEAL Chief Special Warfare Operator William Ryan Owens, killed during a Sunday raid on an Al-Qaeda compound in Yemen. Three other U.S. service personnel were wounded in the operation. 14 jihadists were killed. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg Wednesday called on Russia to use its influence with rebel separatists in eastern Ukraine to end fighting that has flared in recent days. At least 11 people have been killed since Sunday in fighting between Ukrainian troops and separatists. Alexander Hug of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe took part in an urgent meeting Wednesday of the so-called contact group in Minsk. He described the situation in Ukraine as unpredictable and unstable.
And it's caused by the failure of the so-called DPR and the Ukrainian forces to withdraw their heavy weapons. And it's caused by the close proximity of the armed formations and the Ukrainian forces.
Each side blamed the other for the uptick in violence. The UN has condemned an attack along the Cameroon-Nigerian border that killed a UN contractor and four others. The attack occurred Tuesday near the Cameroonian border town of Concha. Shares of Apple stock soared on record company revenues, helping push Wall Street higher Wednesday. The benchmark Dow Jones gaining 27 points to 19,890. Meanwhile, the U.S. Central Bank, ending a two-day meeting, decided to keep interest rates steady, indicating job gains remain solid, inflation and consumer confidence are rising. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, the second day of February, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Congolese are mourning the death of a political giant.
I would say it's rather a challenge for the Congolese people as a whole if we'll be able to show to the world that we still have common values and common priorities, and that we can all mourn Mr. Tshisekedi as a family because he was our father.
Abba Moleka is a former chief of staff of Etienne Tshisekedi, who died Wednesday in Brussels. In the Gambia, Adama Barrow has named his cabinet. Zimbabwe police arrest a pastor as he returned home from self-imposed exile. The African Union begins transition process to a new administration. And new UN Secretary General hails better cooperation with the African Union on South Sudan.
In a meeting with Salva Kiir, it was agreed that we will have better cooperation, both for the UN mission to operate more freely inside South Sudan and for the regional protection force to be put in place.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and a new report sees an increase in number of Islamist groups in central Mali. Those stories, plus our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of the Democratic Republic of Congo are mourning the death of a political giant and leader of the main opposition coalition, the Rassemblement. Minister Etienne Tshisekedi died Wednesday in Brussels at age 84. He returned home last July after spending almost 2 years in Europe for medical treatment and returned there on January 25th this year. His death comes as the Rassemblement and President Joseph Kabila's government are in the process of implementing a New Year's Eve agreement that calls for a transitional government. Albert Moleka, former chief of staff of Mr. Tshisekedi, says his death presents a challenge to the Congolese people, whether they can show the whole world that they have shared values and priorities.
You know, I think it's still very early to try to draw some conclusions or see what may happen in the future for the opposition. The priority now for everybody is just a mourning. And when I say everybody, I mean all the Congolese people. I think Mr. Tshisekedi had impacted the lives of both opposition and majority, and even his political enemies. You know, they admired him and they always displayed that respect. So I would say it's rather a challenge for the Congolese people as a whole if we'll be able to show to the world that we still have common values and common priorities, and that we can all mourn Mr. Tshisekedi as a family because he was our father.
Yeah, I think you're right. Right now it's time for the Congolese people to be given the chance to mourn, but not to be lost on the minds of those of us who follow the DRC. It's because Mr. Tshisekedi was supposed to be at least the leader of the transitional process. Can we say that that process is going to continue?
Well, we'll see. But definitely it's a great challenge, especially for the Rassemblement, the opposition coalition, because Mr. Tshisekedi was the cornerstone of the Rassemblement politically and even psychologically. It will be a challenge to reorganize themselves and especially to find someone who will head the Council of the Wise, because that's the coordinator of the Rassemblement. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to replace such a figure.
Where were things before Mr. Tshisekedi's passing in terms of the implementation of the agreement?
Well, things were kind of blocked. There were 4 points of blockage. Was the way of appointing the prime minister, the sanction that the Sanko, the Catholic Church, could hold in the future within the frame of that agreement, and also the chronogram for the elections and the chronogram for the implementation of the new structure which comes out of that agreement, which is the National Council for the follow-up of the agreement. And also the sharing of what is called here the sovereignty offices, like the justice, foreign affairs, national defense, and finances, things like that. So since the Sanko officials went on a trip for a week, they were supposed to come back next weekend, then most probably the meeting had to resume, but arresting of Mr. Tshisekedi, of course, is a tough challenge both for the schedule of these negotiations and for the political situation overall, because we still don't know. I mean, we'll see starting tomorrow the reaction of the people. But already this evening, there's been some fire shots at Unité. So let's see how the people will react tomorrow. And I think the political priorities will come later.
I think you're right. Mr. Tshisekedi was 84 years old and was not in good health. The opposition probably was prepared or is prepared for this development.
Let's hope so, though. You know, it's still very difficult to prepare for the loss of such a figure. But, you know, Mr. Tshisekedi is a historical figure, and I think we can trust history to take care of itself.
Mr. Moleka, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you, and our deep sympathy for the passing of Mr. Tshisekedi.
Thank you very much, James.
Abba Moleka is a former chief of staff of Etienne Tshisekedi, who died Wednesday in Brussels. He was speaking with me from the DRC capital, Kinshasa. New UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Wednesday that the organization is working to avoid the worst for South Sudan. He also praised the international and regional cooperation that prevented large-scale violence in Gambia during its recent post-election crisis. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
Antonio Guterres spoke to reporters at the UN after his return from the African Union summit in Ethiopia. The new UN chief said the situation in conflict-torn South Sudan is dramatic and could worsen. Guterres said it was agreed at a meeting involving himself, leaders of the AU, and East African bloc IGAD that they would cooperate to make sure South Sudan's national dialogue is genuinely inclusive going forward. He also met with South Sudan's president.
In a meeting with Salva Kiir, it was agreed that we will have better cooperation, both for the UN mission to operate more freely inside South Sudan and for the regional protection force to be put in place.
African nations have proposed deploying 4,000 troops to South Sudan to help stabilize the country, where 3 years of conflict have displaced more than 2 million people. Guterres said it was agreed that Kenya would contribute troops to that force. Turning to the recent post-election crisis in Gambia, where President Yahya Jammeh initially refused to step down in favor of his democratically elected opponent, Adama Barrow, Guterres said the episode demonstrated what is possible when there is regional unity.
It is possible for action to be taken, and it is possible for democracy, human rights, and the freedom of peoples to be defended. When there is division in the region, it is much more difficult for the UN to be able to act accordingly.
Guterres said the narrative about Africa must not be based on the crises, but on the continent's potential. He said Africa has grown economically and has great success stories that must be built on to achieve widespread and inclusive sustainable development. Guterres said that is the best way to prevent further conflicts. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The transition process at the African Union Commission has begun following a meeting between newly elected chairman and Chad's foreign minister, Moussa Faki Mahamat, and outgoing chairperson, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Mahamat defeated candidates, including from Kenya and Botswana, after garnering 36 votes, representing two-thirds of those cast. Jacob Ibn, spokesperson for the former chairperson of the African Union Commission, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the new African Union Commission head would have about 3 months to set up his cabinet.
The transition process to allow the incoming chairperson, deputy chairperson, and newly elected commissioners to take over from the outgoing has started barely a day after the end of the 28th Summit of Heads of State and Government. The incoming chairperson of the commission and the outgoing chairperson of the commission met with all the members of both commissions, as well as with the outgoing chair and incoming chairperson of the union, Chadian president and President Alpha Conde, met today at the AU headquarters to just begin having a conversation on how this transition process is going to go to ensure that it's very smooth, orderly, and happens within the prescribed time.
How long does the rule permit for the transition process take?
The rules actually provide for a period of 3 months, if you like. In the case of this current election or this current transition, we were elected 30th and 31st January. So you'd imagine that 3 months would be February, March and April. Already yesterday, the incoming chairperson of the commission and the outgoing had a tete-a-tete and continued today even after the general meeting, just to be able to get a sense of how to facilitate this process.
Well, Jacob, how long does it take usually for a new chairperson to organize his or her cabinet?
In some instances, you would imagine that even while they're campaigning, they already have a sense of what would be the cabinet, kind of a shadow cabinet. But once the elections have taken place, you can be sure that they'll move very swiftly. And so probably within a month's period, you hear them, you know, appointing the key staff, the chief of staff, key advisors with whom they will be working with, even including members of the secretariat. So it could go as fast as probably within a period of a month or even within a period of 3 months.
There's news that the heads of state have agreed unanimously to have a withdrawal at the ICC if there are no reforms at the International Criminal Court. What reforms do the leaders want to see, looking at the backdrop that some members are not wholly on the withdrawal? An example is Botswana.
Yeah, you're right. One of the decisions that was taken in the 28th Assembly was that of implementing a collective withdrawal strategy, if you like. But of course, not all the members of the union were in complete support of that decision. So you had a couple of member states who expressed reservation. But that notwithstanding, it's a decision of the Assembly that, of course, the issue of membership adherence to the Rome Statute is a sovereign issue, and so each of the member states would take their responsibility. But in this situation, they've had a conversation as a union to express themselves on the manner in which they feel that the ICC have been treating the African countries. And it is for that reason that the heads of state decided to set up the open-ended ministerial committee on the ICC to work with the Assembly of State Parties as well as the United Nations Security Council, particularly the five permanent members, just to ensure that the points have been made. But following the evolution of the situation, they've decided that one of the things is they're going to discontinue the engagement with the members of the Security Council and will proceed with the collective withdrawal strategy to ensure that the points that are being raised by the African member states who are signatories to the Rome Statute would follow the overall recommendations and decisions of the Assembly.
Jacob Ina Eben is the spokesperson for the former chairperson of the African Union Commission. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Thursday, the second day of February. Daybreak Africa time is 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Gambian President Adama Barrow has sworn in 10 members of his new cabinet. As Seni Mariner reports from Dakar, Senegal, the new cabinet includes longtime opposition leader and lawyer Ousseynou Dabo as Minister of Foreign Affairs.
The new ministers took their oath of secrecy and vowed to serve the interests of Gambians without fear or favor. Barrow's administration is taking shape, leaving at least 8 more cabinet positions to be filled. Supporters of the 51-year-old businessman who defeated ex-president Yahya Jammeh have expressed frustration over his decision not to name his cabinet the soonest. The current appointees in Barrow's cabinet are career politicians, mostly from the former main opposition UDP party. This may infuse Barrow's administration in a drama of public opinion. Mai Ahmed Fati is the new Minister of Interior, and he spoke to journalists shortly after his swearing-in ceremony in Banjul.
Our ministry, the mantra is service to the Gambian people. The Gambian people in their sovereignty must be free to exercise all their rights and liberties enshrined in the Constitution. We call upon every Gambian to be a police officer, to be an immigration officer. Every Gambian must come forward to help us protect this country, so that we can develop. Without security, there will be no peace.
His colleague, Omar Jallo, is the Minister of Agriculture.
Agriculture is dead. The cooperative movement, which I worked for 6 years when I left school, has been the brainstorm of agricultural development. It is dead. That is why we have a mounting and very serious job to do. It is very challenging, but I'm sure with the support of all Gambians and our international partners, we will be able to achieve the desired goal of the Gambia.
here is what we know about some of the new cabinet ministers. Lawyer Usenu Dabo, Minister of Foreign Affairs. Mr. Dabo is a human rights attorney and ran unsuccessfully against former President Yahya Jammeh in 5 elections. Barrow rose to power as United Democratic Party leader after the jailing of Mr. Dabo in the summer of last year. Hamad Bah is the new Minister of Culture and Tourism. Mr. Bah has extensive experience in tourism and was the chief executive officer of Mensah Beach Hotel, a local hotel in Banjo. Omar Jallo is the new Minister of Agriculture. He is currently the leader of the PPP. Mai Ahmed Fati, the Minister of Interior. Mr. Fati is the leader of the Gambia Moral Congress, a human rights lawyer by profession. Fati will be overseeing the security apparatus and detention centers in the country. Another appointee, Henry Gomez, Minister of Youth and Sport. Mr. Gomez is the leader of the Gambia Party for Democracy and Progress. Dr. Aissatou Touré is the Minister of Trade, Regional Integration and Employment. Madame Touré is a gender and rights activist who came into political spotlight as an independent candidate for the presidency last year. Reporting for VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Seni M.K. Marina in Dakar.
Police in Zimbabwe have arrested a returning pastor who fled to the United States after leading protests calling for President Robert Mugabe's government to respect human rights and save a collapsing economy. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
Ivan Mawarire was arrested Wednesday at Harare International Airport upon arrival in Zimbabwe after spending about 6 months in exile in the United States. Attorney Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing Mawarire and spoke to VOA late Wednesday.
He has been charged with subverting a constitutionally elected government. The same charges as the last time. I don't know what they are trying to do, so we'll deal with it when we get to court. We haven't been informed, but we suspect you might go tomorrow.
The pastor rose to prominence last April when he posted a video of himself wrapped in a Zimbabwean flag criticizing the state of the country. The video sparked the This Flag hashtag protest movement against the government. Mawarire begged a general strike last July calling for the Mugabe government to respect human rights and save Zimbabwe's ailing economy. Following the protest, Mawarire was arrested and charged with inciting public violence, but a court ruled police had violated his rights and released him. He fled the country soon after. The European Union embassy in Harare said it is, quote, concerned, unquote, about Mawarire's arrest. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
There is an increasing presence of Islamist groups in central Mali, according to a new report released by Human Rights Watch. Their presence has meant an uptick in violence in towns in the area as the groups carry out executions and impose extremist restrictions on daily life for residents. Human Rights Watch's Associate Director for West Africa, Corinne Dufka, tells Ricky Strike how the armed groups are affecting people's lives.
One man I spoke to had attended 4 marriages in December, and he described quite sadly how marriages used to be quite joyful, but he noted that at present, marriages could only be celebrated as they used to in areas where the Malian army is present. Some people describe how they feel pressured to give one of their children, not necessarily under 18, but one of their young men to the armed Islamist groups for fear of retaliation by them. Another described how they came into a village and intimidated people who were selling alcohol.
One of the obviously harshest things they're also doing, you mentioned in your report, are executions.
Yes, we documented 27 executions by groups allied to Al-Qaeda. Most of those appeared to take place in central Mali, but a good number of them took place in the north and as well. Most of those targeted were by these groups of supporting in some way or the other the Malian government, either by providing information to the army or by being representatives of the government, for example, local councillors and mayors.
How is the government and the UN working with former rebels to try and improve law and order in the region?
The 2015 peace accord included a number of provisions. And one of the most important one was, of course, cantonment and disarmament of the armed groups. But also another one was joint patrols by members of the Malian army, by government-allied militia groups, and then by members of the armed groups, including the Tuaregs, as well as a number of others. Now, these provisions have been delayed for a good many months to the point of creating quite a bit of frustration within Malians as well as the international community.
That was Corinne Dufka, Human Rights Watch's Associate Director for West Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Washington, D.C. February is Black or African American History Month here in the United States. And each morning during the month of February, Daybreak Africa will profile historical African Americans and African individuals and events. You may also send us any historical event of your country in the month of February. Now, here are our African American and African history facts for today, February 2nd. On this day in 1915, African American biologist Ernest Everest Just received a Spingarn Medal for his research in fertilization and cell division. Just taught at Howard University for 30 years. He died in 1941 of pancreatic cancer. Also on this day in 1897, 30-year-old Alfred L. Crowley of Cambridge, Virginia, was granted a U.S. patent for his invention of the ice cream scooper. On this day in 1936, Babe Ruth was elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He was a famous Major League Baseball player for the Boston Red Sox from 1914 to 1919 and later for the New York Yankees from 1920 to 1934. Also on this day in 1862, the District of Columbia, which is now Washington, D.C., abolished slavery. On this day in African history in 1990, President F.W. de Klerk of South Africa lifted a 30-year ban on the African National Congress, the leading anti-apartheid group at the time. De Klerk also stated that jailed ANC leader Nelson Mandela would be released. And on this day in African history in 1971, Major General Idi Amin Dada declared himself President of Uganda and Chief of the Armed Forces. Shortly after taking power, Idi Amin launched a genocidal program to purge Uganda of its Lange and Acholi ethnic groups. He also ordered all Indians and Pakistanis to leave Uganda. Now, here is our question for today, February 2nd. Harriet Tubman is legendary because of her role in what movement? Once again, Harriet Tubman is legendary because of her role in what movement? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light. What you gonna stand up for a right. Yeah. So you better get up, stand up. And that's it for this Thursday, February 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Koch, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very, very good Thursday.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bunganya in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 1730 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the northern Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram. The militant group has targeted both Muslims and Christians, killing more than 20,000 people since 2009. VOA has exclusively obtained secret video shot by Boko Haram that identifies its operatives committing acts of terror. We'll discuss the violent organization on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.